Welcome in, sports fans. It is the Glass Half Full and ESPN Pensacola podcast with me, Jordan Glass. Thank you so much for tuning in once again. Several great things to talk about on today's show, so let's just go ahead and dive on in. The NFL, you may recall Roger Goodell about the time around the draft a couple of months back made some comments on the Pat McAfee show about how he was kind of in favor of A, pushing the Super Bowl back a little bit, making it happen a little later, actually making it happen the Sunday before, I believe, President's Day. So that way people would actually have the following Monday off, giving them that day off. But also he was in favor of taking away one of the preseason games, not necessarily taking it away, but instead of it being a preseason game, it would become a regular season game, thus giving us an 18-game regular season in the NFL. Lots of talk and chatter stirred up because of those comments over the last couple of months. As a matter of fact, ESPN has actually gone out and actually kind of did a survey of players throughout OTAs and things like that the last few weeks, just trying to kind of gauge the player interest, because obviously this is something that the players will have to agree upon, right? They'll have to come together and they'll have to agree that they are okay with playing this, or at least that they accept playing it. And there's some interesting comments. I mean, as far as the moving the Super Bowl to a later date, it's kind of some indifference there. Some guys were okay with it. Some guys didn't care. You know, it was a couple of guys that were like, no, I kind of think it's great where it is. For the most part, moving the Super Bowl back an extra week or so didn't really move the needle. But the extra game for the regular season, that is where there's a lot of players who had definitely lots to say about that. Pittsburgh safety DeMonte Kazee, he was talking about it and said, look, whatever the league gives you, man, you just got to adjust to it. I got to this point in my life. I'm an old head now, about to be 31. You just go to adjust to everything and go from there. Them giving us 18 games, I mean, I wouldn't complain about it. Well, that's when Deshaun Elliott spoke up from a couple of lockers down and said, I would. They don't pay us enough. Tamonte then continued, said, I mean, I'm straight. I wasn't getting paid like this where I was at. It can be positive for both sides. People look at it as another week to feed your family. He said he loves it. So, I mean, that just kind of shows you right there that the split in the mindset of the NFL towards adding this extra game in the regular season, at least as far as the players are concerned. There are some players that are like, you know, it is what it is. The league is going to tell us to play 18 games. We play 18 games. And then there are other people saying, no, I'm not going to do it. They need to pay us more. They need to take care of us better. If they're going to make us play longer, we need to be taken care of better. The only problem with that argument is they're not actually making you play longer. They're just taking a preseason game and making it a regular season game. So maybe there's a little bit of a disconnect there. Maybe some of the players don't necessarily understand that. I don't know. I don't know all the talks that have been had as far as the players' unions and all that stuff. But, I think that if you're going to do it, this is the best way to do it. Don't just add an extra game in there and have preseason start a week earlier and still have a full slate of preseason games, which is, what, 3 or 4 games, and then have 18 more on top of that. Just take away one of the preseason games. We really don't need it. And honestly and truthfully, especially if you look at that last preseason game, a lot of your starters don't actually even show up to the stadium for it, right? Like, they're usually off with their families, maybe getting a little vacation time in. So that's why the players kind of aren't necessarily a fan of this model that Roger Goodell mentioned, because maybe this is, you know, it's their time to kind of go spend some time with their family before they get into the regular season and get into the part of the year that matters most for them. So, you know, who knows whether this is going to happen or not. We'll just have to kind of continue to see. But it is fun to debate and talk about. I think it's a great model. I think taking one of the preseason games, turning it into a regular season game, and starting the season off a week earlier so you have 18 regular season games, and then especially the pushing back the Super Bowl. If only one of these things happened, I could definitely see the pushing back of the Super Bowl to where it is backed up to, again, I believe it's President's Day. There's so many of those types of holidays where they're just like random Mondays that are or different holidays, whether it's, you know, President's Day or, you know, things like that. So I believe it's President's Day. Don't quote me on that exact holiday, but it's some holiday that would create a 3-day weekend, basically giving people the Monday after the Super Bowl off, which is what a lot of sports fans have wanted for a while now. So I think that that is more likely to happen than the 18-game schedule. But I think also at the same time, with the 18-game schedule, if you're going to do it, if you're going to add more games to the schedule, this is the best way to do it. I say you just continue to just take away the preseason games, right? Those games are already there. You're just changing it from being a preseason game to a regular season game, and adding a little bit of an added factor of it, if it actually mattering as far as your win-loss total for the season. So I'm all for both of these. I think it helps the league. I think it gives you an opportunity. Look, honestly, I'll be honest. As a sports fan, and I think you could probably agree with me on this, I am all for anything that gives us more football in the fall, right? I am all for it. Bring it on all day, every day. I would sit, you know, let's put the UFL, let's put the AFL, the XFL, the whatever we want to call these leagues. Let's put them in the fall, too, so we have more football in the fall. Because, I mean, do we really watch football in the spring? It feels weird, doesn't it? Unless it's like a spring game for a college team, it feels weird watching football in the spring and then the summer. But getting back to this, I think changing the regular season schedule to 18 games and just kind of flipping a preseason game to a regular season game and pushing the Super Bowl back, I like it. I think it's a great idea. But obviously, again, it's got to go through some different channels and avenues before it becomes a real possibility. And probably those channel and avenues aren't going to be passed through anytime soon. So it's going to be a minute before we see that. How about the College World Series? The final two teams are set: Texas A&M and Tennessee. Yeah, that's right. It is an all SEC College World Series finale. It's going to be a best of three series between these two teams. Texas A&M, Tennessee, the one seed. A&M, I believe, was the 3 seed, number 3. So you definitely got two of the top teams in the country coming into this game. And A&M has just been on a streak in this tournament. I mean, they have not lost a game. They're like 7-0, 8-0, something like that in the tournament. So I think for Texas A&M, you know, if fortune favors them, you know, and history favors them, right? Because A&M is one of those teams going into the College World Series finale without having lost a game in Omaha. And usually when teams do that, they go on to win the Natty, right? The only team that didn't do it was Vandy in like 2014, 2015, somewhere around in there. So that's been the only case out of like the four or five teams that have gone into the College World Series finale series that is the best of three series, undefeated without losing in Omaha. It's like four or five of them that have done it, and only one, like I said, Vandy, has not come out with a national championship. So Texas A&M got a great opportunity. Look, the way they're pitching right now, I know Tennessee's scoring a lot of runs, and the Tennessee bats are hot. But if there's a pitching staff that can cool it off, it's the Aggies. Ask Florida. Florida dropped 15 runs against Kentucky yesterday morning in that first game. And then last night, Florida didn't put a single run across the plate. That pitching staff, and what was it? 14 strikeouts, 15 strikeouts? Might have been more than that. I don't know. It was a lot of strikeouts for the Gators. That pitching staff for Texas A&M is the real deal, and that pitching staff is probably going to be the reason why they win this national championship. So I'm making my pick right now, College World Series, final series. I think A&M gets it done. I think it probably goes all three games, but I think A&M does definitely take home the natty once we are done playing ball there in Omaha. So good luck to both teams, and we'll see how that plays out. But again, another SEC all-final. This is not the first time it's happened in baseball. It's happened quite a bit. You know, there's been times where it was like South Carolina and LSU, and I believe Florida and LSU played for a national title 1 year. So, you know, it's no strange thing for the SEC to have two teams in the College World Series finale. Moving on now, WNBA, Caitlin Clark finally kind of showing what we expect from Caitlin Clark. Had a double-double last night in Indiana's 88-81 win over the Mystics. Fever, look out for them. They're on a three-game winning streak. They are bumped up their record 6-10. if Caitlin Clark can deliver like she did last night on a more consistent basis, Indiana could probably start surprising some people, start winning some games. Like I said, they're on a 3-game win streak now, moving their record to 6-10. So we'll just see how that has to play out for them. LeBron, we talked about LeBron, what was it, about a month or so ago? Maybe a little more than that, and how he had the desire to want to be on the same team as Bronny James, his son, who's coming out of USC in this year's NBA draft. Well, now it looks like Rich Paul, the agent for both LeBron and Bronny James, has come out and said, you know, LeBron's just, he's not really looking to play with Bronny anymore, right? He's not necessarily so sold on playing with Bronny anymore. And here is why I think this leads to the fact that he is probably not going to re-sign with the LA Lakers. Because the top two teams looking at Bronny James right now are the Lakers and the Phoenix Suns. The Lakers have the 17th and 55th pick in the draft, and the Suns have the 22nd pick. They got great opportunities to steal Bronny James from any other team that may want him. But right now, like I said, the Suns and the Lakers are the top two teams. The Suns were never really in the picture and considered for LeBron James. But now that LeBron's kind of backing off saying, you know, I don't necessarily really care if I play with Bronny so much anymore, I think that's a very telling sign about where he sees his future going. And it doesn't seem like it's with the LA Lakers. I don't know. This is what Rich Paul had to say. He said LeBron is off the idea of having to play with Bronny. He went on to say, if he does, he does. But if he doesn't, he doesn't. That's no deal made that it's guaranteed that if the Lakers draft Bronny at 55, that LeBron will re-sign. If that's what was the case, he would force them to take him at 17. And they don't need leverage. The Lakers can draft Bronny and LeBron doesn't re-sign. LeBron is also not going to Phoenix for a minimum deal. We can squash that right now. So, again, like I said, definitely sounds like kind of now that LeBron James is looking at the landscape of where his son more than likely is going to go in the draft when it happens soon. It looks like it's either going to be the Lakers or the Suns for Bronny. And like Rich Paul said, LeBron's not going to take a minimum deal to go play in Phoenix. He's not going to do that. He's LeBron James. Why would he take a minimum deal? I don't blame him for that one bit whatsoever. The other team is the Lakers, and I think LeBron looks at that and goes, yeah, I'm not so sure that I'm going to be sticking around here with the Lakers. So if he comes here, if I play with him, I play with him. If I don't, I don't. So I think this is a little bit more telling, more so about LeBron and his options and his mindset heading into free agency than really, honestly and truthfully, it is about Bronny getting drafted and where he could go. I think it's starting to become very clear at this point that LeBron is going to opt out of his extra year of his contract. He's going to become a free agent. And by doing that, he is going to put himself in a position to go sign and play somewhere else. Could be Boston. Just won a title. Go out there, you know. He sort of kind of played on the East Coast with Miami. That's East Coast. We'll call that East Coast. That's kind of like South, but Southeast Coast. So maybe go play on the Northeast Coast with Boston. Maybe go play with the Knicks. Who knows? Maybe go back to Cleveland, right off into the sunset as a Cav, the way he came into the league. Who knows what's going to happen with LeBron. Another guy that's going to be a free agent with LeBron if LeBron decides to opt out, Paul George. He's come out and he said, look, chasing a championship, it's not a priority for me, this free agency. I'm not looking for a team that is going to help me win a championship. I'm looking for a team where I'm going to be playing the right style of basketball. That's what I'm chasing. I'm at that point in my career where I want to play the right style of basketball that best fits me and that helps us have an opportunity to win. So there is still a little championship chasing in there, but he's not fully. It's not like he's like, oh, I want to go sign with Boston. Or I want to go sign with the Mavericks. I want to go sign with a team that was competing for a championship this past season, right? He's not necessarily going to go with those guys. He wants to go with a team that is going to be the best place for him to play and that's going to give them the best opportunity to win. couple of teams to keep an eye on in that. Definitely the Philadelphia 76ers. You know, Nick Nurse there will they're going to play more up-tempo. That could possibly be something that draws Paul George in. And then the Orlando Magic. And Orlando has definitely been a team that for months now has been linked to Paul George in free agency. Lots of chatter and rumors there of Orlando possibly going after Paul George. And look, here's the thing about that. If you're Paul George and you want to go to a place that caters and wants to, you want to play a certain style of basketball that is the right fit for you, I think Orlando's, I think it's a great option. Because here's what's going to happen if Paul George goes to the Orlando Magic. They're going to cater their offense to Paul George because they right now they don't have an offense. They have zero offensive identity. They have been built to be a defensive basketball team. And being a defensive basketball team is what got them into the playoffs this year. Don't get me wrong. But if you take that Orlando Magic team with the way they play defense and you give them an offense, they're not no longer just a playoff contender. They could be a legitimate championship contender. So going out and getting a guy like Paul George, Orlando not only will throw whatever they need to monetary-wise that they can at Paul George, but they will also base their offense around whatever Paul George wants to do. If Paul George wants to run the triangle offense, that's what Orlando will start doing, right? What I guarantee you, whatever Paul George wants is exactly what the Orlando Magic will do. And, I mean, you can't really fault them for that, right? I mean, you've got to go out and you've got to try to create an opportunity and you know, find a playmaker. Because we talked about it. Banchero can't do it all by himself. You've got to have a dynamic offensive guy there in Orlando. One of the reasons why they came up short in Game 7, right? They jump out to the big lead in Game 7 against Cleveland on the road. You'd think they're going to coast on into the next round of the postseason. And then they just see the Cavs just slowly chip away at that lead and ultimately come back and win. Why? Because they didn't have any offense whatsoever in the second half of that game. You add a guy like Paul George into that mix, that lead sticks, and you talk about an Orlando Magic team that advances on to the next round of the playoffs. Paul George is that difference maker that Orlando is looking for. So if you're the Magic, you've got to do anything and everything you can to get him in there. And if Paul George is saying, look, I'd rather go to a place that's going to cater more so to being a good place for me to play as far as basketball goes, that basketball and the style of play for basketball matters to me more than a championship or going to a championship contender right away. And don't get me wrong, Orlando is a good team. Orlando is probably a team that's going to be back in the postseason next year, Paul George or not. But like I said, Paul George kind of gives them that extra little step up to where they're not just a playoff contender. They could be seen as a actually competent championship contender as well. So, and if you got a guy who's saying it's more so about the style of basketball that's being played than going out and being able to get a championship year one, who else is in a better position for that than the Orlando Magic? Just go to the guy and say, hey, Paul, what offense you want to run? How do you want to do this? You want to be in a place that's the best fit for you as far as basketball goes? Well, what is the best fit for you for basketball? What do you think and what are you looking at? What can we do to help you want to be an Orlando Magic? And set your offense up to go with that and bring in, outside of LeBron James, the biggest target that will be in the NBA free agency. Last time Orlando Magic had a player with a name this big, if they get Paul George, probably back to Dwight Howard. I mean, no knock on, you know, some of these other players that they've had come through there that have left, but yeah, I think Dwight Howard probably that last notable name to come through. So if they can get Paul George, it will definitely be huge for them. So I think we're in for a fun NBA free agency, whether it's LeBron, whether it's Paul George, D'Angelo Russell could opt out there with the Lakers as well. There's going to be lots of players out there that are going to be able to make an impact on wherever they go immediately. And I mean, again, talking about the Magic with Paul George, if for whatever reason they can't land Paul George, mention D'Angelo Russell from the Lakers. That could be a viable option. Guy was one of the top three-point shooters in the NBA this past season. Definitely could mold an offense around him. So, you know, you kind of can start to see a picture here of where we're going free agency, the top guys, who they're going to be. And it's definitely an exciting time in the NBA as far as it's always fun. The NBA free agency is always fun, right? Because there's always surprise teams. There's always surprise players that you never expect to opt out that do opt out. I mean, you remember when LeBron first made the decision that he was going to leave Cleveland and he went to Miami, how big of a deal that was, the courtship of all the teams talking to LeBron, and then we had the decision where it was like between coming back to Cleveland and re-signing a new deal with the Cavs, or was he going to go to the Heat, was he going to go, what was the other team, was it the Mavericks or the Spurs, or I can't remember who the other team was, but yeah, there was like a couple of other teams that it could have been, and they hold the whole like show on ESPN, and finally at the end of the show, he makes that famous announcement that he's taking his talents to South Beach. Free agency is always so fun in the NBA, and I'm definitely looking forward to this year's because we may see LeBron back on the free agent market. Paul George going to be out there. Could see players like D'Angelo Russell out there as well. So definitely lots to keep an eye on as far as that goes. Finally on today's show, a little boom or bust college football edition. Got this from Sporting News. They looked throughout the landscape of college football and found the teams that were either going to be booming or busting in 2024. And they based this off of, they kind of went through a couple of different sources. They went through Athlon, The Athletic, USA Today, CBS Sports, ESPN, Sports Illustrated, and 24/7 Sports, and they were kind of taking a look at some of these teams here, and I thought it'd be fun to go through this list here, and I'm not going to read off what they had to say. I'm going to kind of talk about, from my perspective, where I think that these guys or these teams are going to end up and how I think they're going to play out. So we'll start off LSU. There's several different preseason polls that are high on LSU, top 10, top 15 team. But they did lose a lot last year. Brian Kelly coming back as the head coach. They won 10 games the last two seasons under Brian Kelly. But again, you're replacing Jaden Daniels, who was the Heisman Trophy winner last year. You've got guys like Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. And of course, you're going to be looking for a new offensive coordinator. So it's going to be a situation to where I think LSU is a bust. Simply because here's why I say that. LSU fans, if you're listening right now and you hear that and you go, how could he? Here's why. Because you won 10 games the last 2 years. If you're an LSU fan, putting on the hat of an LSU fan and looking into the psyche of what it's like to be an SEC program that's won 10 games the last 2 years, you're looking at it, you're saying, well, if we win 10 games this year with the 12-team playoff, there's a legitimate possibility that with our schedule and being in the SEC, that we actually find our way into the college football playoffs. And that should be your expectation if you're LSU. I'm not saying it shouldn't be the expectation, but it is also because that is the expectation is why I'm saying bust, because I think there is a fine line there. If you're 10-2, you got an opportunity to get in. I'm not going to say you're in, but if you're 10-2, if you're a 10-2 LSU team from the SEC, there is a decent chance that you're getting in. If you're 9-3, you're out. If you're 8-4, you're out. And I think 8-4, 9-3 is a realistic option for LSU on the season. And that's still a great season for them. You're replacing your top offensive player in Malik Nabers. You're replacing your top player on your team in general with Jaden Daniels. Both are now in the NFL. You've got to replace a lot if you're LSU. I do think they take a step back. I think they lose a couple of more games because the SEC is tougher this year. Remember, there is no SEC East or SEC West now. It's just the SEC. Divisions are gone. Last year was the last year for the division, which means they can play anybody. Texas, Oklahoma, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Ole Miss. There are plenty of opportunities for LSU to stumble up over the course of the season and lose more than two games. And that's why I'm picking bust here. And not that I think that they're going to be busted or a bad team. I'm just using the terminology here because we're talking about a booming season or a bust season. So I think for them, for LSU, because of the expectations they have heading into 2024 of being a team that is expecting, you know, the last two seasons we've won 10 games. Why would we not expect to win 10 games again? And even on top of that, possibly even get into the college football playoff because it's now 12 teams. Because that is your expectations for the season, I got to go with bust. Again, when I say bust, I'm not saying you're going to go 4-8 or 3-9. I think you're probably going to go 9-3 or 8-4. Still going to have a great year. Still going to get to a good bowl game. Still going to be fun to watch. But it's just a lot harder in the SEC now. Not only with the removal of the divisions, but the addition of Texas and Oklahoma, it is going to be even tougher now to win double-digit games inside the SEC. Next team on this list, Oklahoma State. Composite rank here, kind of a general overall, has them right there kind of right around 20. It looks like The Athletic has them ranked at 11. CBS Sports has them at 25. And then a couple of others kind of have them right there around 14 or so. So kind of a composite there of all of them together puts Oklahoma State at 20. And I'm just going to say this. Look out for the Cowboys. Look out for Oklahoma State this upcoming season because they are returning over 80% of their production from last season. Okay? Over 80% of production from last season is coming back for the Cowboys. Coach Gundy is back for the Cowboys. I think this is going to be an interesting team to watch because here's the thing about the Big 12 now. There is no Texas. There is no Oklahoma. Yes, they added Stanford. Yes, they added Colorado. But I'm not entirely sure that those guys are going to really have much of an impact. Utah could be a team coming out of the Pac-12 into the Big 12. They could make some issues for Oklahoma State. But I think you look at the landscape of the Big 12, and I think Oklahoma State has a very good chance of being that team that at the beginning of the season, nobody's really talking about. And if they are talking about them, they're talking about them kind of quietly. If they can stay healthy with the production they have coming back, especially on the offensive side of the ball, I think Oklahoma State could be one of those surprise teams that ends up in that 12-team college football playoff because they win the Big 12. And I've talked about it here on the show before. I full-heartedly believe that Oklahoma State is not only one of the better teams in the Big 12, but a team that can win the Big 12 and a team that can find themselves in the college football playoff, especially now that Oklahoma and Texas are no longer in that conference. It opens up the doors for teams like this. So I think it's going to be a booming season for the Cowboys. I think they're going to have a great year, and I think they're going to have an opportunity to surprise a lot of people. Do I think they can win a national championship? Absolutely not. They will probably get bounced in their first game in the college football playoff if they make it. But I do think they have the talent to get there and make it. So I'm going to say a booming season for the Cowboys there in Stillwater. How about the Seminoles in Tallahassee with Florida State? Composite rank for them, 18. Looks like Sporting News has them at 7. CBS has the Seminoles at 20. And a couple of different outlets have them right around 12 or 13. So kind of a composite ranking there of 18. And I know if you're a Seminole fan, you hear that CBS Sports has you ranked at 20. That is hard to hear, especially after a season where you go, what was it, 13-1, should have been in the college football playoff because you were undefeated, but you were left out. Then you get embarrassed in the Orange Bowl against Georgia, but you didn't have your players there. First and foremost, Jordan Travis was injured, so he wasn't playing at all. And then you have a lot of other players that just decide to opt out of playing in the bowl game because they were getting ready to head to the NFL. Florida State lost a lot over the offseason, whether it was through the transfer portal, whether it was through going to the NFL, whatever it may be. they lost a lot, including Jordan Travis. And it's going to be interesting to see what Mike Norvell does with this team in 2024. But as far as is a boom or a bust season, I don't know. This one's actually the tougher one on this list for me that we're looking at. Because if you're looking at it from the standpoint of what most Florida State fans are looking at it as probably a, hey, we can actually run the table again, and maybe this time the committee actually lets us into the college football playoff. If that's the mindset you're looking at for Florida State, then it's going to be a bust season. But if you've got a down-to-earth approach and you understand what Florida State has lost, and you kind of watched a little bit of that spring game a couple of months ago, and you're going, yeah, you know what? We may drop down to about 8 or 9 wins this year. Maybe kind of be in that same category with LSU. Maybe 10-2, but definitely could see us, you know, only winning 9 games, which is still, by the way, a great season. Again, just like we said with LSU, 9-3 is a respectable record. If that's your mindset, then it's going to be a booming season for you, because I think that's exactly where Florida State is headed to. I don't think Florida State's going to be a bad team, but I do think Florida State has lost enough to the NFL draft, and they've had enough players hit the transfer portal to where I do think they're going to take a step back this year, especially offensively. And if they do end up wearing those turquoise jerseys, look, I apologize if they have special meanings, but they deserve to lose every game they wear those things in. Those things are just yikes. But on a more serious note, though, I do think Florida State's going to take a step back. They do start the year off against Georgia Tech. It should be a game that they win easily. That game, of course, is going to be the opener there in Dublin on August 24th. So they've got one of those week zero games against Georgia Tech. They're going to start the season off with an easy win, I think, against Georgia Tech. But once they kind of get into the more meat and potatoes of that schedule, I will say, you look at the schedule, it is an easy schedule. But there are a couple of teams on there, and we're actually going to be talking about one of the teams they got to play next on that schedule. That presents an opportunity for them to trip up, right? So I do think Florida State takes a step back. But again, when I say take a step back, I'm talking about taking a step back from being 13-1. So 10-2, 9-3, still a respectable season, still a great season. I don't think that gets Mike Norvell on the hot seat. I it's not going to be that bad. But it's definitely going to be a step back from what they were a year ago. The team that I was talking about that they've got to play on their schedule that we're going to talk about next is Clemson. Composite rank for the Tigers, 16. USA Today has Clemson at 10. The Athletic puts the Tigers at 22. And a couple of other variants has them at 12. And I agree with the Athletic at 22. USA Today at 10 is, that's interesting for sure. Look, I've made it very clear. I'm not a fan of Dabo Swinney at Clemson. I think he's stubborn. He's hard-headed. He is stuck in his old ways, and the game of football at the college level has moved way past those ways. I mean, even Nick Saban, when he retired, came out and talked about, you know, NIL was a big reason why I decided to retire when I did. You've got to coach, and you've got to recruit, and you've got to do things at a certain level in a certain way now. That's what you got to do to be successful. Dabo Swinney continues to refuse to do those things. So for me, as long as Dabo Swinney is the head coach of the Clemson Tigers, in this modern landscape of college football that we now have, with the transfer portal, with NIL deals, until Dabo Swinney decides to start using those like everybody else, Clemson is going to continue to struggle. And the problem with that is that Dabo's not changing his mind anytime soon. He's not. You listen to the man talk, he's not changing his ways anytime soon. So Clemson, they are coming off their first season without 10 wins since 2010. So it's been a minute since they've won less than 10 games, and they did that a year ago. I think they're going to do that again this year. I'm going to say bust for Clemson. I'm going to say it's even going to be a Clemson bust so bad that the conversation of moving on from Dabo starts to happen there with the Clemson Tigers, mostly because I think they start to realize you can't do, I mean, it's why Florida got rid of Dan Mullen, right? You can't do things the way you want to do it, especially if the way you want to do it doesn't fit the way that you have to. You've got to follow a certain plan at the college football level to be successful. Dan Mullen didn't do that at Florida. Florida got rid of him. Dabo Swinney's not doing it at Clemson. They struggle enough this year. They look bad enough this year. And there was times last year where Clemson just looked bad, right? Just turning the football over left and right. Couldn't seem to get any kind of rhythm going offensively, which is definitely not what we're used to from them over the last few seasons. So another bad year, or a bad year, worse year than what they had last year. Clemson might actually start looking at the possibility of moving on from Dabo. They got to play Georgia week one. They play NC State early in the season. They go to Tallahassee to play Florida State. That's a tough schedule for Clemson. I'm definitely going to say bust for the Tigers. Oklahoma in the SEC. We'll go through these last two pretty quickly. Their composite rank is 14. They did win 10 games last year. They are now in the SEC. And being in the SEC, some of the teams they'll have to play, they'll have to go to Tennessee on September 21st. Obviously, they're playing Texas on October 12th. Ole Miss, Missouri, Alabama, and LSU are all on Oklahoma's schedule this year. And it's going to be tough for them to repeat with 10 wins. So again, I kind of put them in that same situation that I do LSU and Florida State. Not going to be a bad football team. But based off of what they did last year, based off of how the fan base is going to have their expectations for this team, I'm going to have to say bust in 2024 for Oklahoma. Simply because, again, I don't think they're going to live up to the hype and expectations of the fan base. Because the fan base right now is like, yeah, we could win the SEC. Our first year in the SEC, we could win it. And you know what? They could, maybe. They've got a talented team. But again, just like I said with LSU, it is going to be so hard to win now in the SEC because of all the teams that are in it. Because the best of the best, or I should say majority of the best in college football, are in the SEC. The rest are in the Big Ten. So I think it's going to be very tough for Oklahoma to win. 9-3, again, I got to call that a bust just because comparing it to what they did a year ago, knowing what the expectations are from the fan base, I think 9-3, 8-4, again, just like with Florida State and LSU, quality season, but just not quite up to the expectations they had for this upcoming year in the SEC. Miami, the Hurricanes, the last one. Here is a team that is going to be under the pressure cooker right away because they will head to Gainesville to take on the Florida Gators in a matchup that is an in-state rivalry that they don't play every year. So when they do meet up, they make the most of it. So there's always a lot of heated moments in these games, a lot of hate between these two teams in these games. And it's going to be very, very interesting to see how things happen there with Miami. And I said this before on the show about the Miami-Florida game. This is going to be a game that the team that loses this game, there is a very, very, very real chance that the team that loses this game will be looking for a new head coach at the end of the season. I mean, I would put 85 to 90% guarantee on that the team that loses this game in Gainesville to start off the season for Miami and Florida, the team that loses will be looking for a new head coach at the end of the season. Especially with Florida's back half of the season. They can't afford to lose a game like this. They've got to beat Miami. They've got to beat Central Florida. They've got to beat Samford. They've got to win those SEC games on the front half of their schedule because more than likely they're going 0-5 starting November 2nd on through the rest of the year. So whoever wins this matchup between Miami and Florida is going to be set up to cool off the seat of their coach. But again, as far as the Hurricanes go, they're 6-10 in the ACC under Mario Cristobal the last two seasons. there's a lot of high question marks with the Miami Hurricanes, with Mario Cristobal. So we'll just have to see how things play out. Right now, I'm going to lean towards a bust. I'm going to lean towards a bust for the Miami Hurricanes. Some of these teams are getting busts that are bad seasons, and some of them are getting busts that are just, they're getting a bust because they did so well last year. I think they're going to drop off and maybe lose one or two games this year that they didn't a year ago. So there's levels to it, and obviously I could be completely wrong. The teams that I say could have a booming season could have a bust season, and vice versa. Only time will tell, and we'll find out once we get to the season when it gets kicked off in a little over, a month and a half from now. Oh, somebody get me a DeLorean. I can hurry up and get to August 24th. We can get this college football season started. I am excited for it. I know you are. And once that season does get here, we will have wall-to-wall coverage of everything college football and NFL right here on The Glass Half Full. But that is going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Again, this is The Glass Half Full, an ESPN Pensacola podcast with me, Jordan Glass. Have a great Thursday. Hey, tomorrow, finally Friday. I'll talk to you then.